The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
If you'd like to skip the intro, please refer to the timestamp listed in the episode description. Thank you.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. And Peep is here. She is right over my shoulder. She's on like the back couch cushion. So she's like literally on my shoulder. I don't know if she wants to participate. Peep, do you have anything to say? She gave like a little tiny meow. Not a very satisfying.
She's warming up.
Well, I didn't see the date. It is March 14th, 2024. I'm like all messed up now because I keep accidentally unplugging my microphone and derailing everything.
We've had so many tech issues lately. It seems like every week something goes wrong.
It's because you've been saying you've been having just like a bad string of little things happening in your car and all the stuff. This is just like on top of that. So, but anyway, speaking of the drama, it's maybe come to an end. Fingers crossed.
Maybe. So until yesterday, I had no updates. Again, I was like, it's going to be another week. And I was just sending Patreon. It's actually really getting to me. Like, it's just this heaviness. It's a lot of money, like a heaviness just hanging over you of trying to deal with these bloody idiots. So yesterday, I thought, what can I do that I haven't already done? So went online, I surmised or, you know, found out what some emails of other executives in the head office of the car company were in Australia. Sent off two, actually sent three. One came back and said that I was sent in spam. So I was like, okay, that one didn't work. But the other two went through. I was like, okay, I probably won't hear anything. Anyway, 10 minutes later, I'm not even lying, I get a call and he's like, hi, I just want to let you know, I'm the head of customer relations. He goes, I'm actually familiar with your case. Have you been dealing with, we'll just call him Walter. I don't know if I've called him anything else, but the guy at the dealership who I've been dealing with, the one who asked me where I bought the car from last week.
The dumb idiot.
Have you been dealing with Walter? I said, yeah. And he goes, oh, well, what has Walter told you? And I said, nothing. I said, I haven't heard from him this week. Basically, the last I heard was that there was a meeting about the car and I haven't heard anything since. And he goes, well, that's very interesting because we instructed him on the 29th of February to give you a full refund for the car. And I was like, what? And he goes, so I just want to confirm that you have never been communicated that. I said, absolutely not. I said, I've never, ever, ever had any communication confirming that there's going to be a refund or a replacement. I've had nothing, like literally nothing. And he goes, well, that's very interesting. He goes, I know that you wanted a replacement, but unfortunately at this stage we can't offer you one because there are none in the country and we don't know the delivery date. And he goes, I understand that you've rejected the repair, which is also fine. So basically the one option left is a refund. And I'm like, do you know what? That's fine. Because this week too, I joined a Facebook group, which I'm so shocked it took me so long because I'm all over Facebook, but I joined a Facebook group about the car and there are so many people with the exact same issue for the 2024 model and there's not many of them in Australia. So I figure so many people having the issue for such a small amount of cars, I'm like, maybe this is a sign. I just need to get out of this car and not have it, not have the model, not have the brand. So I was like, look, that's fine. He goes, I'm going to call Walter now. I'll be in touch. So that was yesterday. I didn't hear anything. I'm like, oh God, is this really going to drag back on for another whatever? But this morning, Walter called me about an hour ago and he's like, I just want to apologize. I have been very sick.
As if it's like an excuse.
And he goes, and there was a miscommunication. I did write you an email, but I didn't send it.
No, you don't send me.
Oh, so anyway, he has confirmed that we can pick it. But then, so what he also said is the miscommunication that he was going to send me is they do have a car that I can have. It'll be available in 10 days. It's exactly the same, like for like, same color, everything. And he goes, but it is your choice if you want the refund or the replacement. He goes, I'm going to send you an email today, which is Friday here, which he has already done that now. Could you let me know by Monday? So I think we're going to go for the refund because I'm like, I need to just take these signs that the universe has given me and get out of this and not be dealing with them anymore. Anyway, so yeah, I know, but I feel like he was just stalling to, because the lawyer who I've been speaking with, she's like, they will absolutely want to give you the replacement because that way they keep the money, they keep your business. Like every company is the same. There is no way a company would rather give you a refund than give you a replacement. So I feel like he may be stalled. According to him, he was on death's door with the flu. But
what a dirtbag.
oh, can't believe it. So maybe like I'm not, so we're going to email him back today and he's like, we can do the refund on Monday for you. So today's Friday. We'll have to go in on Monday and do it. We'll have to give the hire car back, which is actually fine. I have got another car I can use from work in the meantime, so that's fine. So maybe the car hunt will start, well, the car hunt will start again. We need a car. So, but Monday should hopefully be the day. Hopefully this will be the last update, maybe a quick one next week, just saying it's all been confirmed. But finally, yeah, I just can't believe it. It actually, and all it took was one email to head office. That was it.
Crazy.
For anyone to do anything. But yeah, so when I joined the Facebook group, I have found so many people with the same issue, which is alarming. So I really suggest maybe if anyone is buying a new car, try and find a group for the specific model and make of the car and see if anything's going on. I've actually joined a new group already for maybe the car we're thinking of getting, just so I can keep an eye on if anything's going on. But
should you say what car it is so people know? Do we have a responsibility at this point?
It's a Korean car. It's not Hyundai. I feel like people can probably deduce from that.
It's three letters, the brand.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? That's out there, like, you know, it's not hard to pick. So yeah, if you want more information, message us and I will give you all the information. People have asked me already and I've passed it on. You know, to be fair, the company have now done the right thing. They shouldn't be having these cars out there if this is going to be an ongoing issue, but that is their issue, I guess, to deal with. But yeah, if you want more information, if you're thinking of buying a three-letter brand name car, send me a message.
Yeah, so hopefully it's coming to an end. It's kind of how you're saying, you just feel like it's like weighing on you. This is also I felt with buying a house, of just like it was always something. Yeah. It was always hanging over my head. You're like stuck because you're relying on other people. And it does just wear you down so much after a while. It sucks.
I felt the same too when we sold our house. It was the same because you just – it's essentially out of your control. You can't do anything. You have to deal with all these other people to make things happen. The exact same with the car. And that's why, like, I think it just got weighed because I'm like, what can I actually do? I cannot do anything.
You're just, like, trapped. And it's also all unfamiliar territory to an extent. Like, you don't know about the inner workings of this car place and you're depending on people or how cars work. Like, I don't know much about getting mortgages and houses and all this. It's the first time ever doing it. And you just feel dumb and you just feel trapped. Like, you can't do anything. But then you have anxiety because it's not done, but you can't do anything to get it done.
And even like if they had said, okay, this is going to be ongoing, I will ring you every Wednesday, whether or not I have an update, I will know. But it was just the uncertainty of like, are they going to call today?
And you could tell they're like being kind of dirtbags. Well, the one guy anyways.
And even when he rang this morning, we were just waiting to record. It was 15 minutes. I'm like, should I answer it? I'm like, do you know what? I've just had enough of him. I'm going to answer it. And that's when he's crying about being sick. And I'm like, oh, that's too bad. Sorry. Mm. Sorry you had to live your life like everyone else does.
Like, sorry, I almost died in a car accident thanks to you.
Oh, anyway, I also feel like I did want the replacement, but I really feel happy. Like, this is, I think, the best outcome. Probably not the best outcome financially because we did get a good deal on the car, but
at what cost?
Like, yeah, exactly. And I feel like the kids will feel happier not being in that same car again, based on, you know, the things that happen. So it is absolutely a great outcome. And I know some people, so many people have said, oh, I've had, not with the same car either, just with their model cars, like I had so many issues and they wouldn't help me. And I agree, it's a massive, massive problem. So you do. And I think the laws in America are different, but in Australia, especially if you have a fault like this, you need to stand your ground. You are entitled to get, if it's classified as a major fault, which the criteria are unsafe, you wouldn't have bought it if you knew. And there's a few other ones, but basically it's not that hard to meet if there is something very wrong with your car. So if that is happening to you, make sure that you stick to your guns and go for a refund or replacement because you are entitled.
Never give up.
Yeah.
When in doubt, email random CEOs.
I feel like such an idiot too. I'm like, they're going to think, what is this crazy person doing? But essentially in the end, that's what got me the result.
Well, sometimes you have to because just like the smaller people, they don't freaking care.
Mm. And like, I get the money is going to come out of the dealership. It's like a local dealership. It's a big dealership in saying that. It's not like a tiny little family run business. They own a lot of car yards, but the money is going to come from them. It's not going to come from Kia Australia, I'm assuming. So, yeah, so like I get why they were stalling. They were probably hoping they could either fix the car or give me the replacement. But anyway, in the end, the outcome has been hopefully almost achieved, knock on wood.
Yes, hopefully.
I'm so sick of talking about it too because every person I see, they're like, anything with the car? Or should I not ask? And, you know,
we're on the edge of our seats.
That we have, the car that I do have, the hire car, has like a massive, it says like accident replacement vehicle on the back. So everyone knows when they see me driving, they're like, oh, I see you still got the car. I won't ask then.
Yeah.
So, anyway, hopefully some good news to come.
Yeah, hopefully. But then this is what I was going to say before about with the house stuff. What?
James Crumbly guilty on all four as well.
Nice.
Do you want to leave that in or do you want me to say
something? No, I'll leave that in. We were waiting.
We just got news today too while we were recording that the James Crumbly verdict was in. He was the father of Ethan Crumbly, the school shooter, and he has also been found guilty of four manslaughter charges, which was the same outcome as his wife last month. So we don't know what his sentence or anything will be yet, but he has been found guilty on all four.
Yeah. Should we post it?
Yeah, I can. There's. I don't think Maggie just messaged it to me, so I don't even think there's any articles up yet. But I will post it as soon as I can see it.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't follow his trial too closely yet. I've been meaning to read a recap. My life has just been pretty crazy at the moment, as I've been saying, with moving, trying to renovate parts of the house, trying to do work on the house. So it's just been crazy. But I'm assuming a lot of it is similar to what was said at his wife's, maybe minus the affair. And I feel the same way still. I think that they were definitely negligent and should be punished in some way.
So her sentencing, I just was looking again to refresh my memory. Her sentencing is happening in April. I'm assuming his will probably happen in May if it goes along the same timeline as their trials. Maybe they'll be sentenced at the same time. I don't know. But, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and we did talk about May doing an episode about kind of like him because his parents.
Because it is a kind of a benchmark verdict, I think. Like, I feel like this is one of the first times, if not the first time, where
I think it's the first time
been found responsible. Yeah.
But I've also always said the same about Adam Lanza for Sandy Hook, that I think that his mom was like a massive key player in how he turned out in the shooting. So I think it'd be interesting to talk about. But anyways, so we did car update, we did that update. I did want to talk about one other thing. It is crime related. So it's not just like mindless chit chat. Let me find the screenshot again of the Moscow thing. Okay. The Idaho murders, the Moscow murders, we all know them. It's one of those cases where just people are losing their minds about it all the time still. It is very sensationalized. There's very many TikToks and dumb videos about all random conspiracy theories. So this, like, I don't even know if it's a joke or if it's serious, which is the sad part, because it's so ridiculous that it should definitely be a joke. But people are so wild with this case that I'm like, maybe it's not. But are you in this group? You sent it to me?
Yeah, I'm in the group. I saw it pop up on my feed the other day.
Like,
there are some wild people in that group, I have to say. Like, that is one case. Like, I feel like things usually die down, and I know the case is still ongoing, essentially. But every day I'm like, what is going on? There's so much still posts in that group when there's actually not much happening in the case.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So someone named JT Miller commented and said, I reserved a block of rooms for the entire month of March 2025. Please use code UOIMCD to get the group rate. And it's like then a screenshot of the like Google maps thing for American Travel In, which looks really shitty, so that's why I'm like, maybe it's a joke. It has 2.4 stars.
It says, I feel like it has to be a joke.
It says straightforward motel offering simple rooms with flat screen TVs, $54 a night. I'm hoping it's a joke, but like with the way people act in this case, I really wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't.
Yeah, like I said when I sent it to you guys, I'm like, I feel like this is the place where actually murders will happen during the trial, so maybe don't go there.
Yeah.
It's a very creepy looking rundown motel. It's just crazy. People are wild.
But then like they added, you can't book online. So it's like, are they joking or no? What was the vibe of the comments? Do you remember? Like, were people
like the comments were like, basically, silly. I would rather, yeah, like it was, I should see if I can find it again. But there was a lot of comments about, you know, what kind of place,
like the one that's here is like, you couldn't pay me $50 to sleep there one night. But yeah, it just makes me think, even though this is going to be March 2025, if it even happens then, so a whole another year from now, I just can't even imagine the chaos it's going to be when this really does go to trial. If it's still now, when nothing is happening, people are still coming out with all sorts of conspiracy theories, still acting like this, still being ridiculous.
I do remember some comments, I can't find the group now, but some comments where people were talking about like actually really attending the trial, like they actually better book a hotel. And then people were talking about the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial where apparently they were, where was that trial? Was it in, I can't even remember where they held it, but anyway, wherever it was. And they're like, people actually used to sleep in parking garages because there was no accommodation. They couldn't afford the accommodation. So to attend the trial, they'd just sleep in the parking garage.
I just don't get it. I guess like I get it for reporters, but they're usually like allowed in. And I guess maybe a lot of these people are just trying to be like content creators and get more followers. But it's just so ridiculous and embarrassing to me. Could you imagine like the families, how people are treating this? I just couldn't even imagine being like, oh, thanks for getting a hotel block with a discount code to the trial for my kid's murder.
Yeah.
Or it's like, I get that they're being supportive, but then some of them aren't, because there was also a lot of like, oh, Brian Koberger didn't do it, it's conspiracy. Like, I don't know. It's like, it's insane. Insane behavior. Yeah, I recommend no one act this way, please.
Before we get into the episode, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor, Thrive Market. One thing that we all have to do is go grocery shopping. Sometimes it's so frustrating, so annoying. Sometimes I dread it. I'm like, I really don't want to go and deal with the crowds. Like our local grocery store has heaps of self-serve checkouts now, so the lines are always really, really long. It's so frustrating.
I hate grocery shopping with a passion, to be honest, so much.
It's so much easier to do it from the comfort of your own couch. And that's where Thrive Market comes in. It's a no junk food, healthy grocery store that even kids love.
Thrive Market is my go-to for all my grocery and household essentials, and the convenience of getting everything online and then quickly shipped to my doorstep is a huge time saver, especially with everything going on in my life right now. I don't have time to be going to the grocery store. If everything can just be delivered right to my doorstep, that is amazing. Thrive Market also carries brands with the highest quality ingredients and sourcing methods. They restrict hundreds of ingredients across their food and cleaning categories, and you can use their on-site filters to suit your lifestyle's needs, whether you're looking for organic kid snacks, low sugar alternatives, or gluten-free pantry essentials. You can curate your own shopping experience with a few clicks to make simpler, healthier swaps. I got some ice pops on there that I really love. They were really good for just like a little sweet treat that was healthier than the usual option that you could get at the grocery store. I also got some treats for my cats that they really love, those little slurp ones that you squeeze out of the tube and they lick it up, and it's really cute. They love those so much. I actually have to get more of them.
And when you join Thrive Market, you're also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. You join and they give. Save time and money and shop at Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/TCS for 30% off your first order plus a free $60 gift. That's thrivemarket.com/TCS, thrivemarket.com/TCS.
All right, so today we're going to be talking about the case of two Dutch women named Chris Kremers and Lisanne Froon. They're 21 and 22 years old. This is one of those cases where you'd assume a lot of people know it, but we were just talking about this like on the side. And I think people who are maybe like younger than their 30s might not know about it as much. This happened in 2014. And even I don't remember it really being like in the news or like actively seeing it online. But just since I'm like a true crime person and I like to read about true crime, I've read about it on my own time, just coming across it, because it is very strange. There's mysterious photos and there's still no real answer as to how the girls died. And there's so many people who, it's one of those ones where there's a lot of internet people trying to put things together, trying to make things make sense. But spoiler alert, there's no real answer in the end.
It reminds me a little bit of the Elisa Lam case in terms of its kind of internet notoriety. Like people still talk about it to this day. There's still interest. There'll be probably more interest coming up now with the 10-year anniversary. But it's one of those cases where it is so creepy and mysterious and there's just, we don't know. Like we can all speculate, but it's just, we will never probably have any answers as to what happened.
Yeah, I think it's also one of those ones where maybe by the names people might not know it. Because so I was just saying, I can never remember their names for some reason. But if you're like, oh, the two girls, they went hiking in Panama and they disappeared.
And the photos.
And
as soon as you say the photos, yeah. Like, yeah.
The photos is what makes a lot of people remember. Yeah. So we did an Instagram poll and it was 66% of the people who did the poll hadn't ever heard of the case. And then people
I thought I'm shocked about that. Like, I really thought it would be the majority had heard of it, but I guess it, you know, teaches us not to assume these things.
No, and then a lot of people were even messaging throughout the day-to-day being, because then they would start, like, looking into it, and they're like, whoa, this is, like, really crazy, and, like, sending their theories and stuff. And then the people who had heard of it were like, oh, yeah, I know the case. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it. So we're going to get into it. This is another one where there is tons and tons and tons and tons of information, or, like, information, non-information, because, like I said, we don't know what happened to them. But you can talk, people could talk about this for days. There's blogs that are so long, posts that are so long about every small detail. So we're just going to go through like the main overview of the case and get into some of the theories and stuff.
Yeah, like, and I know that this is a case where people will be like, why didn't you talk about this? Honestly, this could be a series of podcasts. What we've tried to do is pick out the main important parts. And so if you do want to do a deep dive, you can go. There's some great blogs and resources, which I've linked on our blog as well, if you want to go and check out more and do a deep dive. But we're just trying to give you the main points.
And a lot of the stuff is just other people's speculation.
Yeah, it is. Like 90% of what's online is speculation. So if that's your thing, you can definitely go and check it out as well. But we've just kind of tried to pull the main points and the most interesting parts of the case.
Yeah. And whenever we're recording an episode on something, I try to watch like some videos or see if there's a documentary, just because it's easier for me to sit and retain the information that way. It's interesting. There's really no documentaries about this or anything. There's a couple good YouTube videos, but no documentaries.
Even when I was making the blog, I like to try and put some clips in just to break up all the text. And I guess now it is old, but there's hardly, like, all that's out there is just YouTuber kind of videos and things like that. There isn't much official video footage of, you know, segments or anything out there.
Yeah. I think it's because there's not a ton of factual information too.
Yeah.
But maybe one day.
Suspected human remains and hiking boots found during the search for two young Dutch women have been confirmed to have belonged to the girls. Two different types of shoes and bones were found last Thursday as search teams stepped up efforts to find the girls who disappeared while hiking in Panama. A backpack belonging to the young women was first discovered by a local resident earlier this month. After DNA tests were carried out, the identity of one of the bones was confirmed.
These skeletal remains were sent to Panama City to the DNA laboratory. They have made a forensic chain of custody in order to be analysed. One of these effectively was the remains of a bone consistent with that of a human foot. This foot was analysed and the DNA found on it is a match to that of the parents of young Lisan.
Lisana Froon, age 22, and Chris Kremiers, age 21, reportedly went missing on the 1st of April after setting out on a hike. The girls were in Panama studying Spanish and were reported missing by their host families.
Okay, so we'll start at the start. In March 2014, Dutch woman Chris Kremiers, she is 21, and Lisan Froon, 22 years old, traveled from Amsterdam to Costa Rica, and then they went on to Panama. They would never make it home, and the circumstances surrounding their deaths are still unclear 10 years later. As some background, Chris, she was born on August 9th, 1992, and Lisan was born on September 24th, 1991. They both grew up in the Netherlands. Chris was described by family and friends as open, creative, and responsible. Lisan was said to be aspiring, ambitious, intelligent, and she was a passionate volleyball player. Chris had just graduated with a degree in cultural social education from the University of Utrecht, and Lisan had a degree in applied psychology. The two were roommates, and they also worked together at a cafe. So they saved up for 6 months so that they could travel to Panama together for a six-week vacation. They want to learn Spanish on their trip, and they want to volunteer with local children. I think they were going to teach children English or something. This is why a lot of people who are young travel. So they arrived in Panama on March 15th, 2014.
It's crazy because today here is March 15th. Like it's exactly 10 years today.
Yeah.
I know, obviously close enough for the time difference, but.
Yeah. They toured the country for 2 weeks before they arrived in Boquete on March 29th. They had planned to stay with a local family for a month while they volunteered with the local children. Parts of Lisanne's journal are online, and she spoke about enjoying the trip. There's parts of both of their journals online, but this is from Lisanne's. She wrote, wow. She wrote, wow, what a trip. Like W-A-A-A-H. What a trip. Luckily, I almost forgot about it already upon arrival in the beautiful and cozy Bocas del Toro. I would not want to be found dead in San Jose, although the chance of this is quite high in San Jose. But I could live in Bocas for the rest of my life. Maybe when I ever retire. I'm sitting in the sun, which I can't hold out much longer, by the way, in parentheses hot, and I take a good look around me at my new accommodation for the next 2 weeks. The heat is already very special, by the way. Even in the shade, I have the feeling that I can still burn alive. But despite this, the sun is actually quite nice. How intensely happy it can make a person. Kittens, stray cats, yes, they are regular customers here. They walk everywhere, just like mini salamanders, even in the shower. The cats go in the shower, or the mini salamanders go in the shower. If they manage to keep the spiders away, they could actually become my best friends. We have also seen a dolphin, the ultimate enjoyment. Drinking from a coconut, a real one, yes, and getting sunburned. I worked well on my tan. What more do you want? When Chris and Lisanne got to Boquete, they were told that their volunteering plans would not go ahead. They thought they had prearranged everything, but when they went to the school called Aura, the head teacher told the girls that there was no time for them. She also later said that she couldn't really understand them because they didn't really speak Spanish. And I think it was like the time was basically messed up. They're like, oh, we can have you here next week, but they planned to be here this week.
I can't even imagine, like, that would have been such a shock for these young girls going to this country for a purpose and then to get there and like, no, sorry, you, no.
Yeah. Which I don't even understand how that happened.
Yeah, no. I assume it's like some language barrier thing, but like they prearranged it apparently before they went there. It's a weird scenario.
Yeah. Miriam Guerra, she's a member of the host family that the girls were staying with. She described the girls as restless after they were not allowed to work at the school. Chris and Lisanne tried to fill their days by doing some local tours. They attempted to improve their Spanish as well. Lisanne wrote about her disappointment in the journal. She wrote, "Yuck, our first day was a disaster. As we arrive at Aura on time, we are not even recognized or given a friendly welcome. The only thing we hear is no próxima semana." She wrote, "Equals, we're only welcome next week." What? We return to the school disappointed, and indeed, the daycare only has work for us next week, but of course, we don't buy anything for that. Maybe we'll be able to start tomorrow at Casa Esperanza, fingers crossed. To alleviate our disappointment, we went to Sigrid for a full body massage, some enjoyment, another day tomorrow, hasta la mañana. And Chris said about it, Chris wrote in her journal as well, she said, "Today was a strange day. We are going to the project for the first time. We were quite nervous and found it nerve-wracking. When we arrived, we introduced ourselves, expecting the woman to know who we were, but she was apparently not expecting us at all. She showed no sign of recognition and said that it was not possible now. Very unfriendly, not warm at all or cordial." So she goes on to say how they were disappointed. She does say at the end that they both didn't really want to go back to Aura after they felt like the woman was rude to them and that they didn't feel welcome there. It was a huge disappointment. "Let's hope that the other project is really fun. Well, let's go with the Panamanian flow then." So on Tuesday, April 1st, 2014, Chris and Lisanne set out on a hike on the El Pianista Trail. This is some info about the trail online. It says, "The El Pianista Trail fast became my favorite jungle adventure in Boquete. With its narrow canyon-esque path, the trail is just 4 kilometers out of the Boquete town and is a 3 to 4 hour out and back trail with more than 2,000 feet of elevation. The trail leads you into a cloud forest, which essentially means at least half of the trail is inside the clouds. This turns the scenery into a dripping rainforest where life is buzzing, water droplets are falling to the floor from every leaf, and wildflowers and birds are plentiful." So the girls wrote on Facebook about their plans to hike around Boquete. Chris had a boyfriend back home named Stefan, and she texted him to confirm that they were going to the hike. Just as a side note, Lisanne, she was known to have asthma and had told her host family that she was experiencing some shortness of breath, and that could have been due to the change in altitude. On April 1st, they took a taxi to the start of the trail, which was around 9 kilometers from their host home. The taxi driver would say that he dropped them off around 1 p.m., but this is inconsistent. There's a lot of inconsistencies in the story and the times. But the clock on their digital camera said, indicates that they started the hike around 11 a.m. I'd more so believe the 11 a.m.
I feel like, too, a lot of it is a language barrier and also like relying on things like camera times, and where this, you have to remember this was 10 years ago where things weren't as advanced. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like, you know, there's a lot of very basic reasons that the inconsistencies could be explained, whereas a lot of people online do tend to be more on the conspiracy angle, like he's saying this for a reason, whereas I believe that most of the inconsistencies are probably just for a basic reason.
Yeah, there's a lot of conspiracy theories with this case, but I think a lot of them, as I do with most, but I did read that they said the times that were actually from the camera were the accurate times. There's some, because like, you know, when there, if there's like a news story and they show the pictures and they kind of just tried to add an artistic flair and put like a fake timestamp on it. I guess some TV special did that, and there's screenshots from that TV special that go around. So the times on those photos are just fake times. So that was another thing that confused people. The girls were only dressed for a quick hike. They were just wearing shorts and tank tops. They only had a small backpack, some money, their phones, a camera, and a water bottle. There is a debate on if they even had any food with them because there wasn't any wrappers or anything like that ever found.
I have read that maybe there was like some lolly or sweet wrappers found. But yeah, they had no substantial food, like no energy bars, no...
They weren't planning on like going backpacking. They were just planning to like go on a little walk, go for a few take hours, some pics, and come back. Some reports say that the girls were warned not to do the hike by themselves, but they dismissed the warnings. There's also rumor that they took a local dog named Blue with them on the hike that belonged to some local restaurant owners, and that later that day the dog returned without Chris and Lisanne. But I've also heard people speculate that they don't think the dog actually went with them because, like, the dog's not in any pictures.
Yeah.
So who knows?
It's a weird kind of side note. I guess it doesn't really matter. The only part of it would matter is that the dog came back without them, if it is true. But yeah, it's I've seen it both ways, that the dog didn't go and that the dog did go. So again, another kind of inconsistency.
And then about the trail, or like how they were warned not to do the hike by themselves. I saw people saying that the first part of the hike where you go up to the summit, which they go to and they take their pictures, is fine and normal and not like a crazy difficult hike. But if you continue on, it gets much more difficult. The terrain's more difficult. But there's a waterfall that's beyond the summit, which people speculate maybe they wanted to go to the waterfall and they did try to go further on. But I guess the first part of the hike was fine for just two girls to do without much preparation. So when their host family realized that Chris and Lisanne hadn't returned home, they did a quick search of the local area but found no sign of them, and they decided to wait to do anything until the next morning. They thought, they're young, maybe they went out, maybe they're just out having fun. So there's varying versions of that. There's another version of the story that says the host mother wasn't even aware that the girls weren't home yet and just assumed they were sleeping in their rooms the following day, and that like they just hadn't come out yet. So who knows what really happened, but overall, they weren't reported missing until the following day, it seems. Chris and Lisanne contacted their families regularly during their vacation via WhatsApp, text, and Skype. Last communication with any of their families was made on April 1st. So on Wednesday, April 2nd, Chris's mother sent a message that went unanswered. Her father sent a message also later on Wednesday asking if all was okay. When their parents had still not heard from their daughters by April 6th, that's a couple days at this point.
I guess you just be, you know, what can you do? You just got to wait, maybe assume they have no service, but it would be such an agonizing wait to, especially if they're in contact all the time. It's, but I guess you can't just up and fly from another country with nothing to go on.
Yeah, especially like, do they have their passports? Like, imagine just finding out right now, like, oh, I have to go to Panama. I wouldn't know how to do that. I don't have a passport. By April 6th, some of the families, they flew to Boquete with some detectives from the Netherlands to try to do their own search. So police, dog units, and international detectives searched the area for 10 days. Parents banded together and offered a reward of $30,000. Skip ahead, obviously. No sign of them. Couldn't find them. 10 weeks later now. Sometime in early June, some say June 11th, some say June 14th, 2014, a woman found Lisanne's blue backpack. The woman named Irma Miranda said that she and her husband found the bag near a rice paddy. What's a rice paddy?
Where they grow rice. So it's like
the water?
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's not water. It's like a green field that is quite wet. Like I've seen them in Bali before when I've been in Bali. But yeah, it's a field, kind of like a wet,
oversaturated
field. Yeah, a field, with lack of a better word, where they grow rice. So yeah. it doesn't really, I guess it indicates that they weren't really probably hiking near the rice paddies, but it's just, I'm sure the countryside is full of rice paddies there.
Mm, yeah, I know what you mean. So it was stuck between a rock and the river on the bank of the river. This location, it's around 17 kilometers or 10 miles away from their host home and around 10 to 15 kilometers or 8-ish miles from where the girls were hiking. So the following items were found inside the backpack. There was one black and dark gray Samsung camera with battery. And whoever wrote this list wrote that it's an error. It's actually a Canon camera. There's one 16 gigabyte memory card, one black camera case, one white Samsung cell phone with battery but no SIM card and no memory card, and a light blue cover. Some money was kept under the case, and then it has some of the manufacturing data for that. Also, one black iPhone with a red cover, one black bra, one flower pattern bra, one pair of pink rectangular sunglasses not worn or damaged, one pair of black round sunglasses not worn or damaged, one key with a blue keychain, one small personal item withheld, card stating name L. Froon, and a total of $88.30, one snail, one small seashell. I'm wondering if the snail just got in there.
Yeah, surely. Otherwise, I don't think they'd be carrying around a snail.
Yeah. It's interesting that they say the glasses are unworn. Like, how do they know? Maybe they have stickers on them or something, but I don't see any stickers in the picture.
I do find it interesting that they had bras in there too. Like, that's an interesting two bras. Yeah. So that's an interesting thing to pack for a day hike. Like, I guess we can talk about it more, but maybe they took it off to go swimming or something. I don't know. But it's just interesting. Like, that is something that stands out to me.
Maybe they were wearing like sports bras, but then brought like regular bras with them. I don't know, because there's no other clothing. So
no, that's what I mean. It just seems random that there's two bras in there.
Yeah, like maybe if they want to go out after, but not wear sports bras. I don't know. And I did hear that the card says card stating name L. Froon. It was like a health insurance card or something, which is kind of weird.
Hmm.
So the bag was said to be in good general condition with some small amounts of damage, like tears and scratches. Investigators determined that the belongings had 34 different fingerprints with 13 on the bag. DNA was also detected on the bag contents, but none led to any serious leads for the police, which I'd be interested to know when she got the bag. Like, did she just get it from a store and that's why there's so many fingerprints on it? Did she buy it there? Or did it travel with her and go through like airports? So I don't really think all the fingerprints is really that concerning.
No, I know that when they said they found it, it says the husband and wife found the bag, but I feel like there was a group of them as well. So like maybe they passed it around. Like I feel like it's pretty easily explainable, even at the airport, like putting it through security. Mm-hmm. Like there could be a bunch of reasons why there were so many fingerprints on it.
And my thinking is like the bag got there somehow. You know what I mean? I don't know how it got there, but another thing that was mentioned about the bag was that it was like pretty dry. Nothing in it was really water damaged, which they thought was weird because it was kind of found in a wet area. And apparently it was kind of rainy over those last 10 weeks. So who knows where this bag really was, how it got there. But, you know, just one of the strange things with this case. So police started investigating the data from the phones. Around 6 hours after they started the hike, someone dialed 112, which is the European emergency number. So that'd be the one that they were used to. And there was also calls to 911, which is obviously our emergency number. But I have heard people explain that even if you call 112 or 911 in a country that doesn't use that connect. Number,
yeah,
it'll still connect you to the local.
It understands what emergency. You're trying to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So the first call was made by Chris's iPhone at 4:39 p.m. and the other was from Lasanne's Samsung phone at 4:51 p.m. But none of the calls go through due to lack of reception in the area. So by April 4th, so they started the hike on the 1st, right?
Yeah. There's a really good table from a blog. I'm hesitant to get the person's name wrong. It's called, I think it's Coup de Casse. I'm not sure, but they have a great blog with so much information. And this is a graph outlining the phone use. So basically we'll talk about Chris's phone use first. She had the iPhone 4. Her phone was used on April 1st at 4:39 p.m. and that was to call the 112 number. on so it wasn't used again until April 2nd at 8:14 a.m. So the following morning, she again or someone again tried to call 112. The next day, April 3rd at 9:32 a.m., someone attempted to call 911. And then there was two check signal attempts that day, one at 11:47 and one at 3:59. The following day, 4th of April, there was two signal checks at 10:16 a.m. and 1:42 p.m. 5th of April, there were two checks again, one at 10:50. And then the interesting thing that happens from now on with this phone is that no PIN was entered. So up until 10:50 a.m. on 5th of April, someone who knew the PIN was using the phone. But after that, no PIN was ever entered again. But there was a signal check with no PIN at 1:37 on the 5th of April. On the 6th of April, 10:26 and 1:37, two signal checks with no PIN. And at 11th of April, the last signal check with no PIN was 10:51 a.m. So that's 10 days after they went missing.
And just to be clear, like no PIN, it's like the passcode to get into your phone if you don't refer
so
to it.
So obviously they just
PIN.
Turned the phone on and then turned it off again because...
But you should still, I'm assuming back then too, I feel like, yeah, even if you don't know the PIN to a phone, you can usually still call 911 or something.
Mm.
But like the person couldn't get into the phone at that point. Yeah.
So the last activity on that phone was on the 11th of April at 11:56 a.m. It was switched off. Oh, no, sorry. Well, I don't really understand this part, but it says 11:56, switched off after 105 hours, no further activity, but there was still 22% battery left. So the phone was never switched on again after that.
I think it was left on for an hour and 5 minutes and people were like,
then
I don't
switched off.
Yeah, and people were like, I don't know why they would have left it on for so long. Maybe they were walking around looking for service or something, because normally they would just turn it on and off to try to save the battery.
I still can't believe that after 10 days, it still had 22% battery.
Back then, phones lasted way longer, especially if they were keeping it off.
Yeah. So that is Chris's phone use. And in terms of Lizanne, she has a lot less. Her first attempt was on April 1st at 4:51 to call 112. On April 2nd, she tried twice to call 112 at 6:58 and at 10:52 a.m. At 1:50, someone turned it on to check the signal. There is unconfirmed information that there was a call attempt a short time after that again to call 112 and 911. At 4:19 that day, someone turned the phone on to check the signal and the phone was on the whole night. At 7:36 a.m. on April 3rd, the phone was turned off. On the 4th of April, this was the last use for her phone. At 4:50 a.m., someone checked the signal, and at 5 a.m., someone checked the signal, and then the battery died. So her phone only lasted for essentially 3 days after they went missing, whereas the other one lasted for 10.
I feel like, I guess for some things, it'll just be easier to talk about as we go. So
yeah.
I think with the no PIN, obviously, it seems like maybe at that point something happened to Chris.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't obviously know the PIN to her phone. Maybe Lisanne didn't know the PIN. Maybe it was Lisanne trying to use the phone. But it seems like for some reason, Chris was no longer with the phone, whether she had passed at that point or something happened to her or they were separated. It seems like it was probably Lisanne that was checking her phone. Some people speculate, you know, that it's like a serial killer murderer or something. But I'm assuming it was Lisanne.
I feel like at least one of the girls, and it was probably Lizanne, survived until the 11th, which was when the phone was switched off, and that something happened to her after that. I do agree with you that something probably happened to Chris earlier and that she was unable to use the phone for whatever reason. It's also been confirmed that there were no goodbye texts or messages or anything left on the phone, which I find interesting. I feel like surely if you could tell, like, and especially if Chris, let's say, passed away earlier, surely you could
write something like, on your
like,
phone.
Yeah, I just feel like that's an interesting something, you know, that didn't happen.
You have in the notes later on that they were able to figure out later that at some point one of the girls got onto WhatsApp but didn't have service and typed in, it looks like Miriam misspelled, which was the host family woman.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that shows that it was them trying to contact people at some point.
So according to that blog I mentioned before, this is directly from that. It says, on day three of the disappearance, on Thursday, April 3rd, Lisanne's Samsung phone had been powered on during the night. Between 2:21 and 2:41 a.m., a weather application was used. And then at 2:41, applications on the Android were used, but it's not known which ones. At 11:47, the phone was powered on again and then powered off. At 3:59 p.m., the iPhone 4 was powered on and the contact Miriam was looked up on WhatsApp, and I say Miriam, but it's MYTIAM, and it says, "This is not a typo," and the phone was powered off. So I find that so fascinating, considering what they were probably going through, that this is what they were using the phone for, like weather. Maybe you want to see.
Well, I think they were.
I don't know.
I was reading, I think it was that really long blog, going through it, and I guess there was times where the phone, because now that they had all the phone data, they could see like the service also. So I think that there was times where it would say there was like one bar of service, but still nothing would work. So maybe opening the weather app, they were just trying to see if it would load or see if it would work, and going on WhatsApp just trying to see if it would work, because you know, when your phone says like, oh, you have one bar of service, but still it's not working.
Yeah. I just, I have so many questions about the phone use, and obviously we'll never know, but it's fascinating really to see what they did to try and get help, how it never worked. It's a real mystery.
Yeah.
So police also looked at the data on Lizanne's camera. These are the photos that we mentioned earlier that kind of makes the case infamous. So there were photos from the 1st of April after they started their hike. On April 8th, so basically a week after they got lost or whatever happened to them, 90 photos were taken between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. and it was deep in the jungle and in complete darkness. So on that Kudacast blog, which I'll link in the Owl blog, there's all the photos and I don't want to go through it because I know you guys can't see them while we're talking, so go and check them out. But basically the photos start at the airport. It's them saying goodbye to their families. Then there's photos of them in the beach after they've arrived. They met some other kind of tourists. There's them at what looks like restaurants or bars or hostels, on the beach. It looks like they're having a great time. And you can so this is the chronological order of the photos. There are two men in a lot of the photos, and police have said that they weren't in the area at the time and aren't suspects in the case, two Dutchmen.
It's sad to look at the pictures because I have these same pictures when I used to go on vacation with my friend. It's them at the airport, they're excited, and then they're just typical little vacation pictures, them on the beach being silly with a starfish, having fun, just pictures anyone would take. And then as it goes on, you see them go on their hike, and then the pictures turn very strange, if you want to get into those.
Okay, so as we said, it goes, through the holiday that they've had, and we're now at April 1st, which is the day they go on the hike. So that day, 33 photos were taken with the camera. 23 of those have been made public. It basically says that the other 10 have been seen by several people, but they weren't published. On the blog that I'll link, it also goes into detail about how they know what the actual correct time is, which they say is 11:08 a.m. was the start of the hike, and it goes into details why in terms of the camera time.
They said the unpublished pictures weren't anything
different,
secretive. It was just the same thing still.
Yeah, I don't know why they haven't, if they've released some, why they haven't released them all, if there's nothing bad with the photos, but anyway.
Yeah, I guess that's part of the conspiracy.
So looks like a beautiful sunny day. They are just wearing denim shorts and tank tops. They've got the backpack. They don't have hats that I can see. It doesn't look like they're prepared to be out there for very long. The first few photos of them at the top of the hike, smiling, selfies, then it goes into them kind of in the jungle going down ravine looking type scenarios. So the last picture that was taken is said to be picture number 508. There is speculation that image 509 has been deleted off the camera, and this is another thing that's raised a lot of conspiracy. So the last photo 508 is Chris. It's basically kind of a blurry photo. She's just looking into the camera. It's nothing, just a photo of her. There's nothing crazy or interesting about it. But image 509 has been deleted off the camera apparently, and this is a really big online discussion point. This info about that is from a website called strangeoutdoors.com. It says image 508 is the last photo taken by Lizanne and Chris, but there are two versions of 508. One shows in its metadata that it was taken 8 seconds after 507, but another version of the same photo states that this last photo of Chris looking backwards was taken 50 seconds before the previous photo of her passing the creek. This anomaly could be photo manipulation by someone. No more daytime photos were made on April 1st after the last stream picture. So maybe they tried to return to Boquete, but at this point they were intercepted. That blog goes on to say Dutch specialists have tried to undelete the photo, which is not usually a challenge when an image is manually deleted, because pressing the delete button does not mean the whole file is erased. However, experts weren't able to recover it. There's speculation that someone actually connected the camera to a computer and erased it to make it irretrievable. the girls could have deleted it. And that means basically that the new images overwrote the last image that was deleted. But there's usually at least a fraction of the deleted photo found in that case, and there's no trace of the missing photo. The Travel Channel's Lost in the Wild Hiking to Hell spoke about this disappearance, and they said that basically if they had removed the photo manually any time before the first nighttime photo was made, they would have never even known it was deleted because the next photo would have got 509. So basically 509 does not exist in the camera and it has been deleted somehow by someone. We don't know how.
But it wasn't deleted immediately after it was taken. It was deleted. So it was like there's 508, 509, 510, 511. And then they're like, let's delete 509. Because otherwise, if they took it, then delete it right away, the next picture would have just been 509.
Yeah. So it doesn't kind of move the photos down if there are photos after. It would only make it 509 if there was no other photos taken by that point. Mm-hmm. So April 8, which is a week after they started the hike, is when the 90 photos were taken in complete darkness. These are the really creepy photos. The photos were taken between 1:29 a.m. and 4:10 a.m., with the majority taking place between 1:29 and 2 a.m., so in a half an hour period. I won't read every single one because it's basically a long list of times. So I'll put the list of times on the blog if you want to check it out, but the last one was 4:10 a.m. and 59 seconds. At one point, 7 photos were taken within a 1 minute period. The person who was taking the photos seems to have been laying or seated in one area. Many of the photos basically look the same. You can see the same trees, the same, you know, background in a lot of the photos. I'm just going down a little.
Yeah, like a lot of them are pictures of the same. There'll be like 5 to 10 pictures of kind of like the same thing, but different angles where like you could see like, oh, this tree branch is the same in this picture and this tree branch is the same in this picture. Or this leaf is over here. So it's not like they're moving all over the place or something.
Yeah. So this kind of disproves the theory that someone was using the flash as a navigation tool, because that was one thing that's been discussed, is someone kept pushing the flash so they could see where they were walking. But essentially whoever took the photos was seated or, you know, sedentary in the same place. They weren't moving. I could still see them using the flash to try and see what was happening, but they definitely weren't using it as a navigation tool while walking. One of the photos basically shows some twigs and what appears to be a red plastic bag. It looks like the bag is kind of tied between the two sticks, maybe in an attempt to capture water. There's also a photo too that was taken from the girls' room prior to the hike, and it shows possibly what could be the same bag. It's like just a red grocery bag. Mm-hmm. So that's one photo that was taken. One of the eeriest photos taken, though, shows the back of Chris's head. I'm assuming it's the back because basically you can't see any facial features. It looks like it's literally been taken. Chris is in front of the person and they've kind of taken the photo of the back of her head. It's just her hair. There's so much speculation online about what you can actually see in the photo. Some people say that you can see a nose. I personally can't. All I can see is the back of her head. You can't really see any. You can't see any blood or any injuries or anything like that. It's just the back of her head, a head of hair.
It's weird because it's like, it almost looks like her hair's like hanging back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like you can't tell exactly what position she's in.
There's been so many comments too, like how is her hair so clean after being out there for, you know, X amount of time? But I don't know. Like if she was the one who passed away first, you know, she could have just been lying there for the whole time. It's just like it's essentially there's so many questions and we have no answers about what that photo is, but it is.
Well, there's also people who are like, there's blood in her hair, but not really.
No, it's like maybe, no. I even would hesitate to even say maybe because it doesn't look like there's anything that you could even say might be blood. Like, I don't know. It's just a very weird photo.
Just the way the hair is lying is confusing to me. Like, is it just literally the back of her head?
And what, like, okay, I know we keep saying it's all speculation, but what was happening at that point for that photo to be taken? Why was Lisanne behind her? Like, were they both incapacitated at that stage? There's just so many questions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, on the blog that I've mentioned about, it says no clear head wound is visible, aside from some vague markings under the hair, possibly. What does stand out is how clean and dry the hair is looking. How can someone's hair be so clean 8 days into the disappearance, sleeping in the elements, or does it look clean due to the flash of the camera? So, anyway, just some interesting comments online. Most of the photos are literally just blurry. You can see, you know, when you take photos in the dark and you get orbs, there's a lot of kind of light orbs due to the flash.
Yeah, it just... they seem way more eerie than they probably are, because obviously the woods at night can be scary and unsettling to begin with, especially when you know the backstory of what happened to the girls or just that something horrible happened to them. I'm assuming a lot of trees, bushes.
A lot of the kind of orb, scary looking, creepy things are probably dirt on the camera as well. Like, I'm sure at that point they're not cleaning the camera lens before they use it for whatever reason.
It looks like it could be rain, but yeah. I don't think that is. I don't know if it was ever raining or maybe like bugs even. I don't know.
Yeah. Make sure you check out all the photos if you want to, you know, have a look. But we've kind of explained what the theme of most of the photos is.
Yeah. A lot of people assume that they were using the flash to like see where they were going, but like you mentioned, it doesn't seem like they're moving because a lot of the pictures are of the same area.
I wonder if they heard something and that was why they were using the flash to see what was out there.
Yeah, either they were hearing things and using it to see if anything would come up in the pictures, or I think maybe they were trying to use the flash to signal for help at night because it's so bright.
But it was like, I guess, and this was a fair while after they disappeared though, and it was like early in the morning where you would think people might not be searching. I don't know, but I guess by that point you're probably delirious. You've had no water, you've had no food.
Yeah, they probably didn't really. Well, I guess the camera might have had the time, but they could have been doing it to signal for help.
I'm so interested too in why it was that night that the camera was used. Maybe like
just desperation.
Desperation. Maybe there was only one of them left by that point. Maybe they heard something, but that camera wasn't used like this any other night or any other time after they went missing. It was just this one period of time between 1:30 and 4 that it was used. So as we mentioned earlier, the backpack was found, and after that, a local guide worked with a team of native people to conduct another search of the area. They found Chris's jean shorts on land. The people who found the shorts said that they found them zipped, folded, and placed on a rock above water. They also found bones and two different shoes. The bones were found on June 19th behind a tree and away from the river. Lizanne's left foot was found intact and inside her boot, and it showed multiple fractures of the metatarsals, and DNA tests later confirmed that it was Lizanne. The laces were still tightly tied, and they also had a sock inside the boot. The foot still had some skin and flesh on it, and the shoe with the foot was found upstream. Forensic analysis found that the cut of the bone of the foot was surprisingly clean and there was no blood found on it, but there was also no signs of cutting, hacking, gunshots, or teeth or claw marks. They found 33 scattered bones, mainly from a left leg, which were on the same riverbank, a few miles from where they think some of the nighttime photos may have been taken. One half of a pelvic bone was also found partly broken, and that was identified as belonging to Chris. Chris's number 10 right rib bone was also found, as well as a femur upper leg bone from Lizanne and possibly her tibia bone. They also found a roll-up ball of skin from Lizanne's shin that was located in August 2014. The forensic pathologist later found that the skin was still, quote, in an early stage of decomposition and even contained maggots. In contrast with Chris's fully bleached and clean bones, the pathologist discovered that the bone marrow in Lizanne's femur and tibia proved dry and undecomposed. The bone marrow was intact and unaltered, and that the pathologist speculated that someone may have manipulated that piece of skin.
That's like one of the weirdest parts to me.
There is actually a photo of one of the boots, which you can't, like, it's not gory, but I'm assuming the remains are in the boot. Does look laced, you know, it's just basically like someone took their shoe off, but now that we know there's actually a foot in it, it's pretty crazy. And I have so many questions about how the remains were found. I feel like the jean shorts are kind of explainable because someone probably found them and picked them up and thought, oh, I'll just put them down. Like, that's not a strange thing, but I definitely have questions about the feet.
I have a question about the ball of skin. Like, how do you even find something like that in the jungle? It'd be like, oh, a ball of skin. Like, I know they were looking for their remains, but what does it even look like? How do you even find that? How do you see it? Why is there a ball of skin? It's just weird.
So weird. So there are photos of the boots online, like the other boot that was found is just kind of lying there. It's not, like, again, it could just be a boot on the ground. There's nothing particularly interesting about the photos. I guess just that we know now what they contain.
And the decomposition, how it's, like, different between the both of them is weird, where I guess one could have been more exposed to the elements than the other. Like, maybe, I know, remember, there was one case where, I don't remember what it was, but someone was, like, more underneath like a tree and it kind of preserved their body better or something.
Yeah. So that is kind of it in terms of what happened to the girls, the investigation, the timeline, the chronological timeline, and what we know. As we mentioned, there is a lot of discussion about this case. We wrote down a few points which we found interesting and thought we might discuss. One of the things that we've already kind of discussed is the phone use, and was Lizanne attempting to use Chris's phone after Chris died, which is why there was no PIN number. I just find that fascinating. I just have questions. Why didn't they exchange pins. Maybe they just didn't think about it, but
Mish just forgot. Yeah. After being distressed
and you know what, something else after could so have long. Even happened. Maybe Chris was alive and she fell and then she died suddenly, and maybe then Lizanne was left and hadn't had a chance to ask her about the phone. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of reasons, I guess, why it could be.
It must be. I can't imagine how frustrating it is, like, having these phones and one not being able to get them to have service. Like, you're so close to being able to help yourself, and then also just not even then being able to get into the one phone, or at least you could leave it a note or something if you knew you were going to die and you just wanted to, like, say what happened or say something to your family. It's like right at the tips of your fingers, like the internet, the whole world, and you just can't access it. It must be so frustrating.
And it would be such, like, I, as a mother, I can't even imagine knowing that your daughter died in this way. Like, how horrific and terrifying and lonely and scary it would have been to be out there for maybe 10 days without anyone coming to help you or being able to find you. It just would be a horrible thing to always have hanging over you.
Yeah.
One thing that I've seen asked a lot online is, why won't Panamanian national authorities release the girls' complete autopsies? And I feel like because essentially they don't have the complete remains could be an answer to that. They've said they found the 33 bones or whatever. They, you know, I guess they could release the autopsies of what they believe happened to the girls. But I also believe that could just be part of the investigation. If it is still ongoing, I don't know if it is 10 years later, but I just feel like that doesn't indicate to me that there is a conspiracy, which is what a lot of people think it indicates.
I've also heard, I don't know how true it is, but people said they kind of did like a shitty investigation, which I don't think they were given much to investigate at the start anyways. There was really nothing.
Yeah.
So maybe there just isn't even that much to release because there really isn't a lot of information.
I feel like
pretty much all the information comes from the phones.
And we've spoke, yeah, and like, I also, why didn't, could they not investigate the phone use before they found the phones? They only seem to do that after they found the phones. Maybe back then you couldn't, I don't know, but.
Yeah, like there wasn't a cloud.
So some of the other questions that I found interesting. So why didn't the girls return or attempt to return after placing the first emergency call? My personal theory is that one of them was injured and that the other one didn't want to leave their friend.
They could have attempted to return and just got lost.
Yeah, or something. Like maybe they went off trail and, you know, mm-hmm. I've seen how easy that can be, you know, for some people. Like even I think we did a Patreon earlier on Geraldine Lage, who was basically found so close to the Appalachian Trail, but she was lost and she ended up dying out there after a month or something like that. So like it can happen that you aren't quite as lost as you think you are, but and then you make the situation worse by attempting to return. Like they always say when you're lost, you should wait, but I guess they do that.
Stay still, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I did see like how they said like the trail got a little tougher after the summit, like if the girls decide they want to go try to find this waterfall. I did see posts online how there are like kind of shitty little bridges like that are just planks and ropes that look like they could be easy to fall off of. So it isn't just like a straight trail. It's like over rivers on bridges and rocks and steeper parts. So it's probably easier to get lost.
There are some questions which I think are unreasonable for people to ask. One of the ones I've read, why have we never seen or been given the exact location where they supposedly fell and perished? And that might just be because
they don't know.
How do we know? How can anyone know that? Like, I know that they can attempt to speak about where the 90 photos were taken, but like how else could you, could possibly maybe have a, you know, a deduction based on how far they would have gotten in that time on the hike. But I feel like there's so many unknowns that that's why the information hasn't been released, because people just cannot
possibly
know. In the photos?
The photos, people have tried to match them up forever. They're literally just leaves and branches and sticks where, sure, maybe some things you can match up, but all that stuff, unless it's like boulders or rocks, little branches and leaves can move.
Yeah. One thing we have spoken about before reminds me of Patricia Wumerad and a few other cases, Nancy Ng, the ones where people go missing in countries where they don't speak that language. I just feel like that is such a barrier as well to getting information. And also the processes there, even with Anna Knezovic, who's missing in Spain at the moment, her family have said none of the detectives speak English. It's just such a barrier to understanding how processes work and I guess getting the most out of the processes that do exist there. And in a place like Panama, I absolutely have no doubt, where Boquete, that they would have had no systems in place to deal with an event like this, to deal with two foreigners being missing. Do you know what I mean? Like I just feel like it would have been such chaos. And that would have been exacerbated by the language barrier as well.
Yeah, definitely. I do really wonder, I feel like it's probably not anything suspicious or that weird, but what the deleted photo was, because it's the picture that's in between the normal daytime photos and the nighttime photos.
That to me is the strangest part and the most unexplainable part. Like everything else, I feel like there's probably some basic, you know, basic explanation for it, but that is a very interesting, like, did they take a photo of someone they came across on the trail and that person did something to them? Like, maybe, like, why else would there be such a need to really hard delete this photo?
I mean, maybe it was just an ugly photo of one of them and they were like, ew. Because even if I was dying on a trail, I'd still be like, I don't want anyone to see this photo of me.
We did post that we were doing this case on our Instagram and a lot of people had some comments. This one I find interesting and I feel like I do agree with this one. It's from Kylie. It says, the idea that someone's kidnapped them, but let them keep their phones, held them in the jungle and then killed them is crazy. It's not plausible. It's a Cam's razor. Anything else is just people wanting it to be more. Which I do agree.
Same.
I guess the only other explanation for the 90 photos is that maybe someone took the camera and then came back to where the bodies were. But I don't know. Like, I just feel like it is probably just a sad accident, unfortunately.
Yeah. I do think most of the cameras was either them trying to signal for help with the flash or, like you said, they were hearing things in the woods and trying to, like, see what it was.
Someone wrote, I think they got lost, used the camera flash to see at night, fell and were seriously hurt and stuck, which I would agree it could be part of that. There are still a few people, definitely foul play. My guess is a stranger living in the woods did it. Camera wasn't off, killer couldn't use it and shot by mistake. The police and government in Panama are so corrupt, which I would agree with that also. Someone said that maybe they were using the camera and that's why they took the photo of the head to see if there were any injuries. So maybe she had a fall and they were trying to see if something could happen to her head, which is interesting.
That is kind of what it looks like. So Marissa, like her hair, like she's not just standing there, like the way her hair is parted or the way it's like hanging looks kind of weird. So that would make sense.
The majority are, sadly, I think they got lost and succumbed in the elements.
Yeah, there's people out there that definitely think they met like a murderer, or like a crazed person, or I don't know if it was like native people, but there's houses or something kind of near where their remains are found. Some people are like, oh, you could see in the pictures, it looks like there's figures. But I think pretty much all of that, like the pictures, I think it was debunked or just like, I mean, I don't even see that at all. And I do think it's kind of ridiculous that I don't think they came in contact with someone who harmed them. Who's going to let them like have their phones? We turn their phones on and off for days after it was April 3rd. So a couple days when they were lost and she was on WhatsApp trying to search the host name to try to contact them. Like that shows it was them.
Yeah. And then even if someone did, let's just say they were dead and they were there with their backpack and someone came across it, but then they still used the phone for a few days. If this was the no pin person, but then put the phone back in the backpack for them to be discovered, like why you just take the phone or throw it in the river or do something with it. Like, I feel like it just shows that the phones were found in the backpack, that there was no robbery. Do you know what I mean? Like it was just likely a sad accident.
Yeah. I do also think another thing that's weird is just kind of how the remains were spread around. But animals. I mean, initially I'd be like, oh, animals, but they're like, oh, there's no indication of that. But I guess they only found so little remains, is like, how really can you tell?
So that is it and a bit of our discussion and thoughts on the case. As we mentioned, there is so much information out there. I really recommend checking out the CudaCast blog. I'll log it on our blogger. I'll link it on our blog. It's got so much information on there. Like, it's probably the most comprehensive.
So much information that it just crashed my computer.
And as we mentioned too, it is the 10th anniversary of the case. I've just seen there is a book coming out called Still Lost in Panama. So that would be an interesting read when it comes out. And there'll probably, I would assume, be a little bit more media coverage based on the anniversary coming up. So you might see it out there a little bit. But yeah, interested to know your thoughts. If you have anything different or have any other thoughts about the photos or any of the circumstances, we'd definitely love to hear it.
So let us know your thoughts. Everything will be on the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com. You can follow us on Instagram where we post lots of current updates and things like that. We'll post some of the pictures from this case on there as well. You can find us there on True Crime Society. If you want to follow our personal accounts, mine is StephSum_Olivia's is TCS Olivia. If you want to see what we're up to, we are on Patreon now. We do weekly bonus episodes. We do all of the regular episodes without any ads, and I also release them earlier. I'm trying to get better at releasing them extra early, so that's like really a benefit. And we have some fun chats on there, like some Messenger conversations. So if you want to have a fun little community and chat with us more and get some more content, check out our Patreon. But otherwise, all the usual stuff. Share the podcast. Everyone share the podcast to their Instagram story or tell a friend to listen. It's the biggest way to help us without spending any money or doing anything is sharing the podcast or recommending it to someone. So please do that. Leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify, and you can always leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts and all that. Big help to us, and we greatly appreciate it. So thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there. Peace out.
See ya.